Okay, so the Labor Party, year after year, are travelling further and further to the right. Yeah, they're attacking pretty much anything that moves. It's unemployed people, the unions, workers, Aboriginals, refugees, Muslims, you name it. They've attacked it, and they shift the terrain year after year to the right. So we desperately need a genuine left alternative to this despicable party. And for some people, we already have such an alternative in the Australian Greens. And on paper, some of the Greens' policies are clearly to the left of the ALP. They say that they want to increase the corporate tax rate. They want to increase the tax rate for the wealthiest individual earners who earn over $1 million a year. They want to protect the right to strike. They want to get rid of mandatory and indefinite detention. They want to get rid of the racist Northern Territory intervention, so on and so forth. And it's not just their policies. The Greens are now a clear political force in Australian politics. They've got over 10,000 members nationally. In state elections, they poll, you know, thereabouts of 10%, give or take, in Tasmania up to 20. Every federal election since 1998, they have increased their vote to the point where the last federal election, they received over 1.6 million votes. They've got a federal senator from every state. They've got well over 20 representatives in state parliaments, and there are well over 100 Greens local councillors around the country now. But on the question, are the Greens a genuine left alternative? I'm going to answer and argue no. Why is this the case? Well, firstly, I think to understand what a party stands for, you've got to look more than just what they have down on paper. You've got to look at what they represent in terms of social forces, whose bidding they ultimately do when they get a taste of power, and what their general ideological outlook is. And to go over exactly why I think the Greens are not a left alternative, what I want to do is compare and contrast the Greens to the Labor Party in those areas where Labor has seemed to have declined, or those areas where that have led people to suggest or to believe that we actually do need a left alternative to Labor. And then I want to outline what a left alternative might actually look like, and I want to then compare and contrast where the Greens stand today with what you might consider a genuine left alternative to be. So in that vein, to start, let's go through some of the things about Labor that signify its decline and that's given an opening for the Greens to actually position itself in some instances to Labor's left. And I think the first thing to look at is Labor's embrace of neoliberalism. In the 1980s, Labor was the party which pushed market reforms in Australia, you know, embraced privatisation, deregulation, let the market rule, user pays, all those sorts of things, and lead a whole series of people on the left, both within the party and on the outside of the party, to say that Labor had undergone a qualitative transformation and was no longer a beacon of progressive hope for people wanting progressive or left-wing change in the country. Thanks. But where do the Greens stand on this? And I think you've got to say, looking at what the Greens stand for, they have not articulated any alternative economic strategy to neoliberalism. I think that's very important. And even on the key area that the Greens concern themselves with, namely in the environment and in particular climate change, they don't simply endorse, but they specifically promote market mechanisms to address climate change in the form of carbon CPRS. So I think you've got to ask yourself, does or can an organisation which actively embraces key tenets of neoliberalism, such as balanced budgets, market mechanisms, be a genuine left alternative to the Labor Party? I'm not going to answer that question. I'm going to ask a series of these questions. I don't ask them in simply a rhetorical sense. I don't think the answers are a definitive yes or no on some of these, but I think they're worthwhile thinking about for the discussion at the end. The second point of malaise of Labor has been the decline of Labor's branches. Now, in the past, you think Labor Party branches had a standing in the community. They were often active around progressive issues like nuclear disarmament, Aboriginal rights, anti-war stuff, particularly more so, I think, in the Vietnam era. More recently, one of the defining features of the Labor Party's decline has been the decimation of their branch structure. And partly that's a reflection of the fact that the party leadership has shifted to the right, the executive has intervened in the branches more and more to impose pre-selections, they've ignored policy proposals coming from the ground up. So now, Labor branches are, you know, if you read the Labor Party press, pretty much invisible or non-existent or just paper frauds. Well, how do the Greens compare to where Labor Party is on branches? Well, I think it's important to see the Greens, despite some of their rhetoric, are not an activist party. Despite some of their leading members being activists, and despite the fact that the majority of their members have attended protest rallies, their members are not there as an organised force with their branches. They're there as individuals to bear moral witness. They're not there to build party organisation. Generally, they're not there to build the campaigns. So their branches are pretty much invisible in public political life as well. So I think you've got to ask yourself, can an organisation which has had a growth trajectory over the last 10 years, that is now 10,000 strong, which doesn't actively promote or organise its branches to intervene in public political life or in progressive campaigns, can an organisation like that be considered a genuine left alternative to the ALP? Perhaps. Thirdly, one of the things that I think has put people off the Labor Party has been, you know, the fact that it's seen as a party of careerists, and particularly you look on university campuses, students do not join the Labor Party because they want to change the world. They don't come in saying, I want to join Labor because I'm going to be part of these progressive campaigns, be part of the anti-war movement, be part of the civil rights movement, any of that sort of thing. People join because they want a career path, want to become staffers at the federal level and things like that. How do the Greens stack up to this? Well, the Greens don't have an activist base on, well, a significant activist base at all on university campuses around the country. Where they do have a presence, but they certainly rarely, if ever, involve themselves in left-wing political campaigns. The organisation doesn't seek to actively organise them or involve them in progressive campaigns on campus. Where they run in student union elections, for example, it's not unusual for the Greens to run on a platform that is to the right of the Labor left, sometimes to the right of the Labor right, and in some instances, at least one last year, for the Greens to actively organise with the Liberals and organise a right-wing ticket. So I think you've got to ask yourself, can an organisation that whose youth section on campuses runs to the right of the Labor Party be considered a party that is a genuine left alternative to Labor? The fourth thing, I think, is that Labor today is generally considered no different to Liberals. And this is, you know, one of the major slag-offs that you get from Labor. They're no different to Liberals. They both have the same program, rule for the rich, attack everybody else, ignore, you know, progressive values that they may have once held. How do the Greens stack up to not being much different from Liberals? Well, if you look at the Greens' history, in Tasmania, they have formed minority government with the Liberals. Last year, they actively attempted to form a coalition government with the Liberals when there was a hung parliament after the state election earlier in the year. Last year in Victoria, during the lead-up to the state election, the Greens here would not rule out, in the instance of a hung parliament, supporting Liberals in minority government. They continually made overtures to Liberals at federal level over years, and in all states where they've had senators or representatives in the parliaments, they have actively cooperated and collaborated with Liberals on the Senate committees and things like that. Bob Brown, the party's federal leader, holds up the model of the collaboration between the Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives as Britain as something to emulate in Australia. And I think you want to remind yourself that this is a coalition that is undertaking the most severe attacks on the working class at least since the 1930s, and has led to a situation where the living standards for working class people have stagnated for the first time since the 1920s in that country. So ask yourself, can a party that not only does not repudiate the Liberal Party of Australia as a political force, but actively seeks to collaborate and cooperate with them, can such a party be considered a genuine left alternative to the ALP? That's a question out there. Another thing that, the fifth thing that I think people turns off Labor and makes people think we need a left alternative to Labor, rightly so, is that Labor is primarily focused on winning elections at all costs. You know, one of the things that, you know, turned a lot of, you know, people who've been Labor heartland voters for a long time was, the question of refugees earlier last decade, the Tampa affair, but it seemed to signify everything that was going wrong with Labor, that an issue comes up and Labor would do whatever they thought was going to get them the vote of the middle ground. They wouldn't stand up for anything. Whatever they thought they could do to get in office, they would do. Well, how do the Greens stand up on this? Well, you know, contradictory, but I think to put the negative case on this, I think you've got to say that the Greens more and more have emulated this sort of strategy. Now, for a period from, you know, particularly in the period of their growth, 1999 to 2004, the party's trajectory was uncertain, and they played a role in galvanising opposition and participating in the campaigns around refugees, anti-war, to the Howard government's agenda more broadly. But at the same time, a debate was had out in the Greens over this period about exactly what direction the party should take. And generally, the right seems to have, in most places, the right has significantly won out. And that's partly it's a conscious decision that was made within the party through debate and discussion about how they should position themselves. Partly it was a reflection of the fact, the decline of the protest movements themselves, and the fact that the Greens have been, you know, increasingly elected to office and have been integrated in the machinery of running local council or the state and federal committees that have been put on. So over the last few years, they've accentuated more and more, not, you know, their protest politics or their oppositional character, but their quality of being responsible overseas and participants in government, responsible managers in the parliament, people that the ruling class and the other political forces can rely on. And I think nothing typifies this sort of shift that's happened in the organisation than the comments made by the Victorian campaign manager, Sylvia Zani, last year in the lead up to the state election, where she said, I quote, where this is in an interview with someone from the Age newspaper here in Melbourne. "We're trying to cut through this old image and false perception of the Greens as tree-hugging radicals. That's not what the party's about. We want to change that image and be more attractive." So, you know, you've got to ask yourself, more attractive to who? Middle-class voters and aspirational white-collar workers, people who repudiate struggle and look down on activists. So I think you've got to ask yourself, again, around this area, can a party which seeks to adapt itself to the prevailing sensibilities of the elite in society only in order to prove itself capable of being responsible managers of the system and the capitalist state, can they be a genuine left alternative to the Labor Party? The sixth point, I think, is another area of significant decline of the Labor Party, something that represents the Labor Party's, you know, trajectory to the right. The Labor Party has historically had factions, only really organised in the 1970s as, you know, as formal factions, but the existence of the Labor left as a faction in the Labor Party was something that was an argument for people to join the Labor Party, at least despite, you know, the sellouts of the Labor leadership, despite the skullduggery of the right. People in the Labor Party often made an argument that, well, you've got to join the Labor Party, you've got to join the left, because the left will fight the right, and if we get enough numbers in the left, we can take over the party, and we can be the people that will implement the progressive policies and the left-wing agenda that, you know, our base really wants to see. Well, a defining feature over the last 20, 30 years has been the absolute decline of the socialist left faction, and leading figures in the party have rightly attested that there has been absolutely no competition in the party around policy platform. There's been no fight from the left since at least the late 1980s. So the left faction effectively now is simply a mouthpiece to the right and only exists for getting bums on seats. And it's leaders of, you know, former leaders or people who identify as part of the left faction that are ones that not only accept and go along with the right, but often they're the ones that are implementing the right's policies. You think of Jenny Macklin with the Northern Territory intervention, Gillard, who came from the left, is now Prime Minister, attacking the unions, attacking refugees, and, you know, some of the stuff we've seen, you know, every week out coming out of her mouth, and the rest of it. So, well, how does then the Greens stack up on this? Well, I think it's important to say that there is no organised left-wing current within the Greens. Yes, there are left-wing individuals and, you know, certain socialists and ex-communists in the organisation. But there is no platform or factional opposition. There's no socialist current. There's no class struggle current. There's no anti-neoliberal current or platform. In fact, there has been no organised grouping that has publicly come out to attempt to challenge the dominance of Bob Brown's conservative faction. You will not, I have not, and I have not heard of any person attempt to recruit to the Greens on the basis, you need to join the Green Reds so we can roll Bob Brown in the future. It's not an argument you generally hear coming out of the Greens. Now, at this point, it could be said, you know, on some issues, possibly I'm being unfair to the Greens, and, you know, I'm only telling half of the story. And in particular, there are different sections of the Greens. Clearly the Tasmanians, they're the ones that cooperate, collaborate, form government with Liberals. The New South Wales section is generally considered more of a bastion of the left, more socialist, more, you know, it was born out of the Labor Party in New South Wales in the 80s by people who were disillusioned with the trajectory of Labor. And they've, you know, seemingly had more of a consistent line in holding to the left. You know, and they've got people today, as I think typified by the stuff that's happened around Marrickville Council and the state, I don't know if it's executive or the state council, passing resolutions supporting the BDS campaign. I don't think, and this is obviously important, I don't think this necessarily at all negates any of the things I've said. I think it shows that there are left-wing people, that they're, you know, the Greens is a contradictory organisation. It does have different currents in it. But at the same time, I mean, the stuff we've seen around BDS, we are seeing, you know, as soon as there's a right challenge, we've seen people in Marrickville Council fall away quite quickly and start towing the line again. But we can talk a bit more about that in discussion. I don't want to particularly go on too much about them right here. But I do then think we've got this question that lingers from the question of factions as a whole. If you've got a party, the leadership or certain sections of the leadership of which are openly making overtures to the Liberals, forming government with them in certain circumstances, denouncing the left within the party, cozying up to the right, posing themselves as responsible economic managers and overseers of government. If you've got that sort of an organisation, and it's 10,000 strong, and you do not see the formation of a significant current that comes out and publicly opposes that and publicly tries to cohere an oppositional current to push back that right-wing agenda, can you say that this organisation is a genuine left alternative to the Labor Party? You know, that's open for discussion. Point seven, and I think here, let's go back to the policies. I said at the start, Labor's policies are rotten. I don't think there's anyone here who's going to particularly disagree with that. And a whole lot of the Greens' policies, I think there won't be too many disagreements with this, a whole lot of the Greens' policies are to the left of Labor. And I'm not going to say all, but here's where I'll bend the other way and not talk about the negatives and talk, accentuate the positive Green policies. But I think also, you've got to take things with a slight grain of salt with some of these things, because you've also got to look at the way that the Greens use their policies and the way they position themselves. Now, if you look at the last federal election, the opening campaign for the Greens, well, the campaign launch, the slogan for it wasn't for a left alternative to the Labor Party. It was for a strong, safe crossbench in the Senate. Now, at the Greens campaign launch, this is what Bob Brown says. He said, I offer the electorate experience and stable leadership and the progressive policies and clear vision for Australia's future, which the big parties are ignoring. Then goes on to list some of the policies they have, some of them not left-wing, but some of them progressive and some of them left-wing. And then he goes on to say, this election is also about the Senate and a strong crossbench delivering better outcomes for Australians. The Greens are the responsible alternative to a deadlocked, Abbott-controlled Senate. So this is how the Greens position themselves, right? They contrast themselves not to the Labor Party, but to the Liberals. And they contrast themselves to the Liberals not in order to show what right-wing scum, genocidal promoters of the Liberal Party is, but to say that that the Liberals are irresponsible. They're for deadlock in the Senate. And what the Greens are going to do is be a pliant, you know, grouping in the Senate which will break the deadlock. And according to Brown, they won't be blocking anything. So, this is, and I think, let's look at the way it played out. And this is, now you've got to say left or right. This is the way that it's played out. They have been responsible, bargain hunters in the Senate, and they haven't blocked anything. Mm-hmm. And it has been, in particular, you know, if you look at the figureheads of the Greens, you know, we've been talking about Bob Brown, but Adam Bandt, who is clearly from the party's left, called a closet Marxist, by some on the left, had the left out campaigning for him at election time. He's been the figurehead because he's actually in the lower house. So he's the one that gets to be part of the negotiations with the government and to make speeches in the lower house. So the Greens, with Adam Bandt and Bob Brown and Christine Milne and Sarah Hanson-Young and the others, entered into an agreement with the Labor Party to ensure... what was the thing? To ensure stability for Labor in government was the program. Now, it's important to see that the Greens didn't have to enter into any agreement with the Labor Party or the Liberal Party. They could just simply vote on policy and bills as they came into the Parliament and the Senate and vote in a principled way on them. They chose not to do that. They chose to sign a deal to guarantee supply to a government committed to neoliberal policies, a government which is attacking refugees, which is attacking Aboriginal people, and which is about to release a budget we know that is going to attack the poor, the vulnerable people on disability support, the unemployed. The Greens have already passed this budget. That's important to see. And now, what did they pass this budget in? What did they get in return? Well, the actual agreement that they signed with the government that gets the Greens a seat at the table does not contain any measures on Aboriginal rights. It does not contain any measures for refugee rights. It contains no measures for workers' rights. It contains no measures to increase corporate taxation. It contains no measures to redress this scandalous situation of public funding going to elite private schools while public schools crumble. It contains no measures to address this rampant greed and profiteering in the mining sector that is under tax. No measures of progressive character whatsoever. This is what they got out of it. They backed Labor in exchange for such things as the Greens gaining access to government departments for Greens election policies, for a leaders' debate commission, for establishing a parliamentary integrity commissioner, which is an oxymoron in my opinion, and for establishing a parliamentary budget office. These are the things that the Greens signed an agreement for in order to get their hands into the pot. There's nothing progressive about this. And I think that's why when you say the Greens have left-wing policies on paper, you've got to take it with a grain of salt. Because sometimes people can say things on paper when they don't take responsibility for them. When the crunch comes, things can just fly out the door. And a number of years ago, an academic in Western Australia, Narelle Mirigliotta, referred to the Greens as people who use radicalism in a highly pragmatic way. And I think that's a very apt description of the way they use their policy. So, ask yourself all these things and think about this budget. Remember this when the budget comes next month. Are these the actions of a party which is a genuine left alternative to the ALP? And point eight, finally, this one, I think, you have discussion on a number of these points, and we will, whether or not, yes or no, genuine left alternative. Can a genuine left alternative do this or that? I think this last one, though, I think this one's a clincher for me. One of the key developments signifying the decline of the Labor Party has been the fracturing of their rank-and-file base in the workers' movement. This is partly a reflection of Labor's long drift to the right, their, increasing rejection of class politics and their turn towards becoming more and more simply like a party of big business, a party just like the Liberals. And this is important because the working class is the only class that has both the interest and the capacity to fundamentally challenge the agenda of the rich and powerful. Any organisation which you can consider a genuine left alternative or on the left has to have a claim to the only social force that has the capacity to transform society in the interests of the poor and the oppressed. Now, how do the Greens stack up on this front? Well, the Greens have several thousand union members, but they have no rank and file base in the union movement. They have no workers' fraction in the organisation. They have no workers' caucuses. They have no workers' conference. They did not intervene into the most important working class mobilisations in this country in a decade, namely the work choices, not the demonstrations, those Greens members certainly there, but the mass delegates meetings. The Greens did not intervene into these. It has a number of officials in the union movement, but as far as I understand, no organised current within the bureaucracy, and there are certainly no green unions in the way that used to have red unions with the Communist Party. the organisation has made very few attempts to intervene in the workers' movement at all. They had an opportunity, in particular in Victoria in the last decade, where the Secretary of the Electrical Trades Union, Dean Mile, briefly joined the party, but they made absolutely nothing of it. And clearly, they actually weren't that interested in making anything on it. They actually didn't really want this blue-collar unionist or his blue-collar union to have much of a presence in their party at all. Further to this, the party's active membership seems heavily dominated by the middle classes. 40% have master's or PhD qualifications. 60% are professionals, and the average age is 50, indicating this is not a bunch of entry-level white-collar workers, you know, going to the low rungs of the public service and that. These are people who've been around a lot longer and are more than likely pushing up the rungs to either be, you know, definitively middle class or getting very close to it, having a lot of control over their own work and others in those sectors. So ask yourself, can an organisation that has that not only has no base in the workers' movement, that has no strategic orientation to the working class, and that is dominated by a middle-class membership, can this be a genuine left alternative to the Labor Party? And I'll tell you something for nothing, comrades, I'd say definitively not. But it's one thing to sit there, you know, or stand here as I am, and just say no, no, no. Wouldn't want to be accused of being a naysayer. So it's at this point that I want to say, well, what would a genuine left alternative look like? And I think this is another way of then thinking about where the Greens fit into this. And I don't want to be too definitive, but I think there are three things, not necessarily the only necessary characteristics of a genuine left alternative, but I think three things which are very important and are necessary. Firstly, a genuine left alternative would at least identify as being left. It sounds silly, but actually whole chunks of the Greens don't even identify as being part of the left and don't want to be associated with the left. So why sections of the left insist that the Greens are a left alternative when the Greens, I wouldn't say exactly how many, but either a significant minority or a majority in the Greens do not identify as part of the left. I think they identify as progressive. Secondly, you have to have a base in the workers' movement, an organised base, not just worker members here and there, like any party can have worker members, an organised base. Thirdly, you need to have a strategic orientation to the working class as a class that is deserving of the world, in a sense, you know, that this class can change the world and deserves to be at the forefront of reforms in the system. So at this point, I think it becomes clear looking at those characteristics. But there is no genuine left alternative to the Labor Party in Australia at the moment. So in terms of saying, well, how do we contrast Greens to something, I wanted to look at a party which I think you can consider a genuine left alternative to social democracy. It's a German party which simply calls itself the Left, Die Linke. Now, to clarify, Die Linke is, like the Greens, it's a contradictory organisation. It's made up of different sections. It has a right, it has a left, it has a centre, has people that accept neoliberal policies. It has participated in governments and implemented neoliberal policies in a certain couple of areas in Germany. But nevertheless, I'm not going to go into a detailed exposition. I'm not an expert on Die Linke, but I think if you look at some of the characteristics of this party, you start to get a sense of what a genuine alternative actually would need to look like. And I'm just going to look at four areas of Die Linke and contrast them to the Greens. That's the social composition, their vote composition, their political composition, and their platform. So quickly look at the social composition. The process of building this party, Die Linke, they only established themselves as Die Linke in 2007, but it was a merger of two currents, so an old Stalinist party of Eastern Europe that used to be a ruling party, and a breakaway group of activists, unionists, and intellectuals in the left. So in the terms of social composition, I want to specifically look at the West German section, because the East German section is like 75% of them are pensioners and over 50% of them are over the age of 50, and they're a long-established party. But on the left, in the West German section, this is an organisation that was built out of disillusionment with the direction of the German Social Democratic Party. It was built as a breakaway, and there were involved expulsions from the SPD because of an oppositional current, and involved a whole swathe of lower-level trade, as far as I understand, lower-level trade union officials, and a lot that came out of the key
metals union over there, IG Metal, which is a 2 million strong union, which generally sets the agenda and wage setting and things like that. Left-wing intellectuals and unemployed people, and members, general members, rank and file of the SPD, who opposed the neoliberal policies that the SPD were implementing. And here's what one commentator said of them around their formation of the West German section. Their circle of activists and sympathisers consisted of a mixture of this, that, and the other in their 40s. There were signs that it, this is the West German section of Die Linke, there were signs that it posed a threat to the SPD with several large union demonstrations. Now, the West German section claimed 5,000 members within a couple of months of its formation, and by 2006, which is, you know, about 2 years after it sort of started forming, claimed 12,000 members. But contrast this to the Green. I think it is inconceivable today that you could say that the Greens could put on a union demonstration of their own, let alone one that had any challenge to the hegemony of the Labor Party in the Labor movement, particularly in the union bureaucracy. And I want to repeat stuff here. They've got 2,000 union members, but no rank and file base, no union conference, no workers' corpus, no current in the bureaucracy, no green unions, none of the sort. So looking then at the voter composition of Die Linke, in 2009, the Bundestag elections, which is the federal parliament, Die Linke won 11.9%, and this is the title, I'm not just talking about the West German section now, the total of the party. They won 11.9% of the total vote, but among blue-collar workers, they gained 18% of the total vote in the country. They gained 25% of the total unemployed vote in the country, and they gained, I think, around, extrapolating from what they got at the 2005 election, around 20% of the total unionist vote in the country, and only around 7% for the self-employed vote. Now, in contrast to that, the organised blue-collar section of the workforce is a minuscule portion of the total of the Greens vote in Australia. Even among the Victorian branch of the Electrical Trades Union, this is a union whose leader joined the Greens. It's a union who has given unprecedented support to the party at the last federal election, the greatest support of any union in the party's history in terms of funding and promotional material to the party. Even among that union's own members, only 10% of ETU members polled were voting Green, and that's lower than the national average of the total vote for the Greens, and compares with 50% of the ETU who are voting for the Labor Party. Now, as the Greens made their electoral breakthrough in 2001, Bob Brown was quite emphatic about the fact that small business owners were the key to the Greens' electoral breakthrough, and that they had a serious base of support in that population. In 2007, in the federal election, half of the Greens' Senate vote came from people on incomes above $70,000. So a significant chunk of this is not going to be working. Some working class people do get paid over $70,000 a year, no doubt, but the vast bulk of working class people do not earn anywhere near $70,000 a year. And the party, the Greens, poll, unlike Die Linke, where you see, well, they have a base in the working class movement and the unemployed, in the unemployed sectors. The Greens poll disproportionately high in upper middle class blue collar seats, liberal seats, Wentworth, Kooyong, places like that. And in key working class seats, Sydney's West, Melbourne's West, they poll disproportionately worse than their general vote. So, you know, 5% and things like that is what they end up getting. Now, their political composition. The Left Party has a number of internal political platforms to it. And let me read out a couple. They've got the anti-capitalist left, which includes the Fourth Internationalists, includes Fourth Internationalists. They've got the communist platform, which is very minute and Stalinist, nonetheless. The socialist left, which is a trade union-oriented tendency and contains people from the international socialist tendency, as well as trade union activists and some independent socialists. And this is a platform that had about 500 members as of early 2008. And the program of that platform is entitled Overthrow All Relationships, which is borrowed from Marx's famous phrase, you've got to overthrow all relationships in which man is debased, enslaved, and abandoned. They've got the Emancipatory Left, which has its roots in what they call the old alternative scene, which I figure is a swamp sort of scene, you know, alternative lifestyle sort of people. They've got the Reform Left Network. I'm not sure much about what they're about, actually. And they've got the Democratic Socialist Forum. And the Democratic Socialist Forum, mainly based in Berlin and the East, and they're dubbed by the rest of the party government socialists, because they're the ones that want to form government with the German Social Democrats. And this is the right of the party. So broadly speaking, in Die Linke, there's a left, a swamp, a pragmatic centre, and a right. Most of whom, nonetheless, as you gather from these platforms, still identify as socialist. Even the right identifies as a socialist current in the party. And the key debate in Die Linke is not about whether or not they should do a deal with the Christian Democratic Union. The heated debate that goes on in Die Linke is over the question of whether or not they should enter into agreements or into government at all with the German Social Democratic Party. So it's a whole other layer of argument removed from the sort of argument that goes on in the Greens today, where they question whether or not they should support the bloody open party of capital. Now, let me skip over some of that because I'm going on. So in the Greens, you know, you have to speak for very long. So there's nothing actually comparable to this as organised currents. There are no organised currents, let alone organised socialist platforms in the organisation which seek to win people to their program and away from the leadership. And the final thing that I want to say before I definitively run out of time is the question of their program. And I'm going to just read a bit from the Die Linke program. And bear in mind that Die Linke is not a revolutionary outfit. This is a left reformist organisation. That doesn't mean they can't be a genuine left alternative, but people can talk more about that in the thing. They say, "We stand for a change of system because capitalism is rooted in inequality, exploitation, expansion and competition. We want to build a society of democratic socialism. We intend to transfer large structure-setting industrial companies to democratic social ownership and to overcome capitalist ownership. We hold that workforces should receive shares of the business assets produced by them without renouncing any part of their wages. They should have voting rights on all important issues. Private banks must be nationalised." Now, in contrast to this, I think, like, this is a genuine left alternative program. It's not, I mean, it's very radical sounding. It's not revolutionary. But it's very far, very far from what you hear coming out of the Greens. In fact, the Greens is dominated not by any ideological current which has a claim to labour or they have not articulated any anti-capitalist platform at all. But in fact, they're dominated by middle class liberal individualism. This is the ideology that dominates the party, and it has nothing to do with transforming capitalism in the interests of the vast bulk of workers and the poor at all. So, to conclude, I have argued via making a series of examples and contrasting the Greens with Labour and the Greens with Die Linke that the Greens are not a genuine left alternative to the Labour Party. However, I do believe that a genuine left alternative to the Labour Party seriously does need to be built in this country. And I'll leave it there.